Design Huddle. I'm back with Mustafa. We got an awesome episode. We're talking about the psychology of waiting, loading animations, and Facebook. This also has to be one of, you know, Mustafa's expertise, so I'm excited to see what he's got on this topic. But any designers listening, basically, how can we make the load time, the spinning wheel of death, a little bit more bearable, and kind of get into some design best practices as well in this episode. So Mustafa, kick it off. What do we got today?
Okay, so we're looking at an experiment that was done by Facebook. Now, I'd like to start off with, this is highly unethical. We're not suggesting anybody does this, but I think what this story brings up is quite an interesting thing about people's perception. So Facebook, there's this story where a designer was speaking to a Facebook designer who shall not be named, and we talked about an A-B test that Facebook actually did some time back a few years ago, and they had like their generic spinner, which was like three squares and they animate like from left to right, and then they actually created the iOS spinner that you get, which is like your typical thing that literally is a spinner that spins around, and what they found was whenever the app was slow and they used a Facebook spinner like from their website, people would blame the app for its slowness. They say, oh, something's wrong with Facebook, this is a terrible app. But when they switch the spinner to the iOS spinner, so it looks like something is happening in iOS.
Wait, so within the app, to be clear, this Facebook loader was basically three bars lighting up from left to right, and then the iOS was just the spinning wheel of death, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So when they did the Facebook one, people blamed the app, saying Facebook is slow. But when they in the A/B test, they actually swapped with like the spinner of death within the Facebook app. People blamed iOS and blamed the system.
Interesting.
So an interesting thing where things can slow down within an app. Maybe things are taking too long to load. Just by what we call blaming the system rather than blaming the app. It's a very interesting take. They're people's perception. Because people will be much more patient with their operating system than they were with an app. Like with an app, you just try to force quit, right? You just get something's wrong with that. But if it's Windows or Mac OS, you're like, you're compelled to wait because this is the system. So I found this quite an interesting thing. Another example in this article, which we pulled out, which is quite an old article on Mercury.io, was Marissa Meyer, a former Googler, pointed out that pages that took like half a second to load resulting in a 20% drop in traffic. And the story that Marissa pointed out where they actually got more results on a Google search page. And just by getting those more results, people dropped off because it was just like taking too long. And we're talking about half a second, which is nothing. But half a second plus latency, plus poor devices, plus old browsers, you could end up waiting much, much longer. And so people drop off from this. And this is like, you see this pattern again and again. Like we see websites which like, you know, improve their performance and they see like conversions go up and vice versa. There's like an example from the Financial Times website. The Financial Times is a website based in the UK, very highly respected newspaper, but it's like a paywall. And so what they do, because it's a paywall, they can't target every single type of users for email campaigns or whatever. What they do is they look at users who regularly visit the site and they come up with this algorithm known as the tipping point. And so if a user comes and reads at least 5 articles a month, that's the type of user they try to target, however they do it within the site. If they can collect emails with whatever, but 5 articles a month is enough to encourage them to subscribe. And if they get them to like 9 articles a month, then they're more likely to subscribe. But what they found was just by making, I think it was like the website 1 second faster, they improved engagement for everyone by 5%. So just speed and like this perception of speed, is really important, especially on the web where, again, you have dead zones in countries, like in like really big, rich countries. Like in London, you'd be on a bus and you go between 2 complete concrete block buildings. Internet connection dies like that. It's like what I call dead zones.
Yeah.
So having the speed and at least having a site cached so that it can continue with an experience. And you know the Trivago experience, right? Like what they did with the game when a website goes offline. They will have this fun little pinball game. Well, it's not pinball, but it's like a pinball where you go through a ball through a maze. And they found that something like 67% of users continued on with the experience when they came back online. Again, it's like these distraction things or like passing the blame on the network or in the system actually does make an impact. And I find that stuff fascinating. Highly unethical, the Facebook example. Again, this was like, in this, it, this article makes it suggest that this was in a bar, a Facebook designer told, oh, by the way, we did this. So I can't 100% validate this, but it's quite an interesting story.
No, it's super interesting. And I think like the perception of speed is a growing topic of interest. The one thing that you mentioned there, I think is a really interesting point related to this, is that anytime your site has a dead end, it's a bad experience. So a lot of times is that, you know, it's like if you go to one of my favorite examples of a non-dead end is like, you know, what you really should do is a redirect. But have you ever seen like incredibly designed 404s? You know what I mean? Like they're beautifully designed 404s as like a way to like...
Well, there's a Russian website one where it's like the construction website where the construction guys on the website, it's like a vector graphic and they're all dancing.
Yeah.
And the music's so joyous that you'll sit there and listen to the whole
song. Yeah, so it's like my... And it's similar to like if you're on an e-com site and, you know, you search for, shoes and... you bring back no results rather than related topics. So the journey doesn't end. You're giving them suggestions of other things that might, you know, keep them engaged or trying to meet their goals. So back to this perception of speed though, I just wanted to get your take. Like if you're say that there's a designer listening and they're in the process of kind of iterating on different options for load screens. Like where would you start? Like what do you think an ethical and well designed, loading screen looks like today?
So there's a couple of things from my research which I've done myself. Well, there's a talk I gave like in regards to designing for speed, designing for friction, and so what you see is skeleton screens. So basically, it's like content placeholders. Usually, they're gray boxes. That actually works quite well. Loading in frosted or pixelated images first and then replacing them with high quality ones. Basically, you want to get content in as soon as possible. So Medium, LinkedIn, they do like these content placeholders or frosted, like Medium does think header images are frosted slightly before the full one comes in. Basically, if you've got a blank page, people don't know what's going on and you need to fill it with content just to reassure the user that something's coming.
How would you, if people aren't familiar with the skeleton screen, how would you describe it?
So if you were to open up Google Maps, they do skeleton screens on there as well. So basically, you've got, say, like Maps or Medium or LinkedIn. When you first open it, I think Facebook does this as well, actually. You'll see lots of grey boxes where the content is. And it won't be 100% accurate, but it's basically telling the user content's loading and it's coming and it'll be in this space here. So big box for the images, lots of grey lines for the text, and then they swap it out the moment the content is there. That's pretty much the basis of a
skeleton screen. So it's giving the reader a hierarchy or like an organization of what the page will look like when it's done rendering.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes, yeah, So in, as the sort of the term suggests, like it's the skeleton of the page, basically. And it's not 100% accurate, so you don't have to make sure that, you know, some articles or some designs will have the images will be bigger on the other. That's not the point. The point is showing something rather than showing nothing. The only danger with grey boxes is that when you ask users feedback, they think it's broken. Because, you know, especially on the web and UI, grey is always, like, disabled or not working. Like, is the colour of choice. So grey is perhaps maybe not the best thing. So what you see, like... Google Photo, is it Google Photos or Google Photo Search? What they do is they show a base color of the image. So if the image is mostly red, they'll show like a tone of red to represent that. I mean, if you can get an engineer to do that for you, just like a sort of replacement. I think there are like libraries and frameworks where you can actually do something similar to that online. And that way, it brings some color into the page while the page is loading. So that can be quite cool as an alternative. But the other one is just like frosted images. So the image when it's coming in is just really low pixel. And for designers, we like to see the finished thing. So when we design, we always design the finished load state. But when you look at the UX hierarchy of importance on the web, the most important thing is speed. So showing something, even if it's partially loaded, is better than showing nothing. Especially if the site or app you're working on is like a service, like an e-commerce site or something like that. if it's like a game, then there's a kind of it's, again, it's all contextual, so there's kind of expectation that people will download the whole thing first and then play, because it's expected that those things will be much larger. But if it's an actual service or a system that someone has to do an activity, like purchase a ticket or, you know, use a map or whatever, then you kind of have to use these techniques to speed the person along much quickly as possible. Otherwise, if they get bored, they'll just abandon and find another experience.
So that's super, that's great insight. And I think a lot of times developers get the heat for this, when I think it's a shared responsibility between both engineering, product, and design teams. So a lot of times designers throw over the fence like these awesome designs. The marketing team probably had buy-in. They have, you know, high-res images, a bunch of third-party tracking pixels. The page is heavy. So as a designer, you know, as designers, how can you help bridge this conversation to make sure that everyone's thinking and trying to get the best experience possible while also making sure that your end design looks beautiful?
Yeah, the thing, I think the challenge is we always design the last state. We don't think about the apps in terms of state, like loading state, empty state, partially loaded state. We just design the final thing, right, as pages. So oftentimes you're just leaving it to the engineer to figure it out. So the engineer will always keep going back, what do we do in this? And because you haven't really considered it, if you're working on another project, you'd be like, I'll just do whatever. So then that part of the experience breaks. So really you want to be thinking about, when content is coming in, imagine if there's a little bit, if there's a lot, if it's broken, if the typeface doesn't load, like try and think of all the different potential states. And this is where you can actually sit down with the engineer and say, okay, this is the final thing, but I need to figure out what's the loading state, what's the empty state. So the empty state is like a term where, what's the first thing a person sees? Is there onboarding? Is it a wizard? Is there a tooltip? Is it just nothing with just a signal saying, you need to do this to start the app? And so then you actually start getting into the weeds of becoming a proper UX designer, where you're actually designing flows and states and use cases and then user personas. So an existing user who has data but just wants to load the app for the first time on a new device. Do you know what I mean? Where you're actually designing the state of the app rather than a page of the app.
So that, I think that's super clear. I guess like one other question on this topic is, so designing, you know, offline states, loading states, etc. How do you make sure you're not over-indexing or spending too much time on like one area? Like for example, like maybe you're if you're a designer in New York City right now, you're thinking like, oh, you know, like offline mode can't be that popular. Like the subways have Wi-Fi, we have, you know, 4 and 5G. Like, why should I be spending time on an offline mode? So can you talk about like, if it is, as a designer, how you would think about dividing your time, making sure you're not over-indexing, but also making sure you're thinking about, you know, the different states?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it depends on your business, right? And I say whenever you're designing anything, especially when it's like a system-wide thing, focus on one thing that you really put your effort and energy in. Make sure the rest of it's competent, but try and make that one thing really, really powerful. So maybe it's not the offline, maybe there's an offline game that you design, but that's it. You don't try to go to town with everything. And again, this is an iterative thing over the course of design, sprints, not like design sprints, but engineering sprints. Oops. And so that's one aspect of it. Another aspect is there was a story told by, I think there were three Jewish guys who were trying to set up a dating agency for like the Jewish community. And so the Jewish community have like a very specific way of dating. There always has to be a chaperone because of just like cultural and religious practices. But what they found is, I think it was based in New York, but they weren't able to, the business didn't go too well and they were going to shut it down. But what they found was this site saw this massive spike of interest in India and was like a large user base. Because what they found was the similar thing that the Jewish community have culturally, they have in India as well. And so what they did was they went over to India, they opened up an office, they rebranded and just pitched it straight at the Indian market. And the app was a huge success. I can't remember what it is, but I'm sure we can find the link and add it in the description. The point I'm making is you don't know where your business is going to be. You don't know who your audience will be when you first start out. What you think the app will be may not actually be what people want. You know, it's like in The Social Network, the Facebook films, like when they're arguing about advertising. We don't even know what this app website is yet. We don't even know what it could be. And it's like that kind of thing. When you're designing something, you may not realize that the audience isn't who you think it is. And that's where you're crossing design and business. So I'd say from a practical point of view, focus on one element that you can and develop it. don't think of your systems as a finished thing. It's an iterative process, and you have to, you know, keep working on it. And also, you have to make the work interesting for yourself, your portfolio. You don't just want to just make these, you know, like, you know, every error message is just a red box above the text and stuff. You want to make this interesting for your users as well and engaging. So yeah, I mean, just try at least one thing, and all you need is one win, and then the business will buy into your experimentation and exploration as well. So yeah, that's what
I
would say.
Do you think you have to, like getting back to the actual, like transitioning back to like the actual perceived performance? So, I think the idea that I struggle with a little bit is the idea that like the people use perceived performance. They think it's the idea of tricking your user into thinking the site loads faster than it actually is, rather than just being like, I like it when it says like some load screens will say like all of the complicated things they're doing in the background. It's like, you know, compiling files, like I think a lot of video games do that. Well, they'll like the load screen tells you like all of the things that are happening in the background. To me, like that's my favorite type of like loading experience because it's giving context of like, you know, what's going on under the sheets.
Well, no, Blizzard, the games company, they have a game called, I think it's Hearthstone. I could pronounce Hearthstone because I'm dyslexic. But they have a loading screen, but it will say, because it's a card game, and it's supposedly in a bar, and you're playing with other people in this tavern, rather. And so the loading screen will have, like, where you would have system loading, they'll say cleaning up bar stools, mopping up beer. You know, just like, basically, imagine if it's the loading screen of real life, right? But, like, the system things of, like, okay, pouring out new drinks or, you know, kicking out a drunk person or whatever. So that's taking that concept and flipping it on its head. But most people, like most users, won't necessarily understand this language, and it makes it inaccessible to them is one aspect of that, as the sort of the downside to that. The other thing is people are impatient, and you know, the reality is, you know, grits take 7 minutes. You can't make it in 5 minutes. You could, but it'll be terrible, right? Or there was the meme that was going about this illustrator. We took an hour to draw Spider-Man. It looked perfect. It took 10 minutes. It looked like a sketch. It took 10 seconds and it looked like terrible. And it's like, nothing fast is necessarily good in terms of quality, well, of food or whatever, or even expectation of art. But people are still going to be impatient, especially when it comes to services. So if you're a business and your competitor is taking a millisecond to load and you're taking 10 seconds, that's going to affect your business.
Right.
So you have to think of that as well.
I think you're just getting to like making everything a little bit more human and having empathy for the person's time. And I think there is a threshold where people will wait. I think the threshold for wait is decreasing. People are becoming, like you mentioned, humans are in naturally impatient, but I think they're becoming even more impatient. So creating a human experience that's not misleading it's actually a really, like, the more I think about it, this is such a simple thing that we take for granted, but it's actually a very difficult design challenge in a lot of ways.
I mean, the other thing is context, right? Like, everything is trying to grab our attention. Yeah. Like, one example is, like, advice that I saw someone giving, like, designers is when you have your phone, turn it upside down and put it behind your monitor. Otherwise, the messages and notifications will distract you while you're doing your work, and you need silence to work. And so, because everything's grabbing your attention, you know, you could be in the supermarket and you need to search something, or you could be out and about and there's poor network connectivity. Especially when you're traveling and out about, your threshold for patience is weaned a lot. And especially you've got small kids and it's raining, and you know, all the sort of life things. Those are the things added together which will make perhaps a normal experience seem really bad. Like, so I think when there was research done by Google, they said like a third of technically fast sites were considered slow or perceived slow by users. So, and again, that's all down to context, you know, people moving around, internet connectivity going slow for a brief moment, perhaps they're under a lot of stress, you know, like travel is the most stressful thing, especially like airplane travel, like the most stressful thing. If someone's trying to find something in that environment, something that's 3 seconds in the real world, may actually be like 1 second, like may feel like 30 seconds to them. Like there was a book called Engineering Time by, I forgot his name, but he's like a PhD. He used to work at Microsoft. He may be still there, but he gave an example of like no two bits of time are the same. So he, if you have a loading bar, the engineering way of doing it is every 10 seconds, you represent in the loading bar in terms of a percent. Also, say file size, say it's like 10 megabyte, you show like 10% of that in the actual bar. But he says, like, you know, the first few seconds are actually people are much more patient, and the last few seconds people are really impatient. So what you do, so showing representing 10 percent for like, you know, a megabyte of 10 megabytes, what you do is you show 30% of the bar filled even though 1 megabyte is loaded, because people will be like reassured that it's coming along and it's really quick. And if you leave the last bit, like, you know, just takes a bit longer or a bit shorter, so you know, so maybe the first bit is like 3 megabytes, for example. Like the way you flip it is basically you hack the time so it feels like it's getting quicker towards the end, rather than you just doing exactly the same amount
throughout the entire
every time it's loading. So yeah, so, and it's like when I read that, I was like, wow, that's actually quite a clever way of doing it, because it's not so much that you're trying to fool the person, it's just the way we perceive time is down to what's going on around us at that moment. If we're sat down, things feel normal. When we're moving about, things feel slower. And again, maybe it's to do with the adrenaline pumping through our system. And, you know, we perceive time differently depending on our anxiousness, our comfortability. So it's not a binary of, are we fooling people or being unethical? It's the way people perceive time means that you're basically aiding them in a way to help them make the right decisions, and trying to mitigate the other external factors, which is making them feel like this is taking longer.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great breakdown.
I sound like such a BS artist right now.
No, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I mean, like, you know, I think it's good. I mean, like, we're getting really into the psychology here. Like, the psychology of waiting is like the kind of the underlying theme of this episode. But you know, this is not my expertise at all. Like, I don't have much experience here other than the basics, but I think we got some really good actionable ways to make your loading animations, you know, more human, more effective. So thanks for those tips. That was pretty awesome. Anything else before we drop?
No, I mean, I just say, like, the Facebook example back in the beginning, blame the system. It's not so much we're saying do that, but it's like make the consideration of how people will perceive things. Is basically the message that we're sending. So yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, another episode in the books. Thanks everyone for joining. If you haven't done yet,
thank you very much.
Go follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and tune in every Monday for new episodes of Design Huddle. Thanks everyone.
Peace.
All right, dude.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and 2 tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Design Huddle. The opinions expressed are solely our own and do not express the views or opinions of our employer.